Hello and welcome to Quote Unquote Guilty, the only guilty pleasure podcast with air quotes in the title. I am your host, Joe Sanders.
And I'm Brett Gornick.
And I'm joined today by my cousin, Brett Gornick. How's it going, Brett?
It's going well. You guys can call me Little Niz.
Little Niz? I'll call you Little Nainer.
Not as good, but I'll take whatever I can get.
So a while back, my computer crashed and I lost our recording of Beverly Hills Ninja. It was one of two recordings I lost. So we're back finally to redo it. Try it again. And I will back it up this time so I can't lose it.
And just so you guys know, the last one was like one of the best things you would have ever heard in your life. So if this one isn't that good, don't worry, because the last one guaranteed was one of the best things ever recorded in history.
It's like that Tenacious D song. Like, this is not the greatest podcast in the world. This is just a tribute to it.
Right. I was thinking the same thing. So just think of that. And the last one was really, really good.
Couldn't remember the greatest podcast of the world. This is just a tribute. Yeah, I can't. It was so long ago that I can't really remember what we talked about, but we just rewatched the movie and we're just going to start over from scratch.
I'm here. I'm ready.
You ready for it?
I'm ready. Yes, let's do it.
All right. So I think it should be established first and foremost that I think this qualifies as a guilty pleasure because even Chris Farley hated this movie. I read that online that after it premiered, he was so depressed by it and just like crying on a friend's shoulder, like a producer friend's. I don't know if it was a producer for this, but he was just so embarrassed by this movie. And I don't know why.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious. Yeah, I don't know why either. This is like everything he always did. Falling, yelling, yelling.
Yep.
That's it.
Apparently, for some reason, he thought that this was taking it too far. Like, this was taking his trademark physical humor and making it too broad, making it too cheap.
The only thing I could think is that they do make his character look really dumb in this. So maybe that's what he thought, is they make him look even more dumb than he pretends to be.
Yeah. I mean, Haru's not really good at anything at all.
Yeah, Haru's pretty much your classic idiot.
Right. He fails at everything. Everything he attempts ends disastrously. The scene that jumps to my mind right away is when he's showing off, pretending to be a ninja for Allison when she comes to hire a ninja. And he's like, I am trained in all of the deadly weapons of ninjadom. And then he tries to pick up a stick and the entire rack falls apart. He tries to whip it around and he destroys the ashes of a bunch of fallen ninja warriors.
I did notice something this time watching it, is that everybody asks him and he's like, I'm a ninja, and they don't ask for any proof or anything, but then he decides to show them his really bad moves. Every single person in the movie, he just pulls stuff out and is just like breaking and smashing stuff. It's almost as if he doesn't know he's bad, or he thinks this time it's going
to
be better.
He does seem pretty oblivious to the fact that he's a bad ninja, that he does not understand any of this.
Usually if someone's claiming to be good at something, but they know they're not, they hide doing it around people at all costs. But he's just like, ninja skills, watch this. Just breaks everything in his way.
That's a really good point. It was like, if he realized he was a fraud, he wouldn't, you know, show it off.
Yeah, exactly.
He thinks he's a good ninja.
But this movie would be really bad without his yelling and screaming and breaking of things. Like the opening scene, if you just think about it, if it was a regular actor just kind of being stupid, it wouldn't be that funny. The fact that he's like doing everything over the top, screaming and yelling and breaking everything, makes it watchable.
Are you talking about like the training montage where he's in school with the
other
ninja?
The scene is all just bad, like just setting up how bad he is at being a ninja.
I love like the progression of time where he keeps doing the exact same misstep and hitting Gobe in the face
when he was a kid. So for 20 years, he hits him in the back of the head.
Every time he does that routine wrong and whacks Gobe in the side of the face with his bow.
And one time he tries to play it off like Gobe won't know that he's been doing it for 20 years. He's like, hold the stick up in the air like nothing happened.
Hey!
I actually remember last time we did this, we talked about at the beginning how there's like this opening scene on the beach with the chest sitting there and the ninjas do like cool flips off of like the cliff to go down to it, like just to be cool. I have no idea why. Like, there's probably another way to get down there.
There are a couple other cool flip jumps later in the movie too, when Gobe and Haru jump in to help each other out in the end fight. They both do weird flip jumps.
All ninjas do is flips. That's what I learned from this movie.
They're good at flipping. They like to show off. They're a bit showy. Although, isn't the plural of ninja ninja?
I'm going to say yes.
I think it is.
If anyone disagrees with us, they're wrong, and I hate them.
Sure, tweet at us, but I'm pretty sure a group of ninja is, ninja.
Yeah, I was actually wondering today if these movies would be good at all if we didn't have nostalgia for them. Like, because I watch Biodome and other terrible movies. I'm thinking, if I would watch this now with like a clear mind, would I enjoy this movie? And you can never go back in time. I'd have to drink a lot and get hit in the head a lot.
And this, I think, would probably be entertaining if you didn't have nostalgia for it, but I definitely do. I've been watching this since it came out, 97, and I was 13. That's pretty...
Yeah, I would watch anything Chris Farley did at that age. Mm-hmm. Just watching some large man fall and scream was funny.
Just hoping he would make Tommy Boy again. Like, I was... Yeah. Everything I would watch everything just hoping it would be close to Tommy Boy. And this is probably, in my opinion, as close to Tommy Boy as he got. Like, this is maybe second place for me as far as Chris Farley movies.
I was noticing that too. I don't know if he has the same haircut Tommy Boy as he does, but is that a hairstyle he liked and it was in his contract that he wouldn't get rid of that? Because he has the hairstyle of like a 17-year-old boy who's never really gone out into public at all.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like a bowl cut, but it kind of curls up underneath itself, and it's really long. It's not buzzed on the sides. It's like a bowl cut that's grown out too far. It's
terrible.
He looks like Toad from Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, he kind of does. I was also wondering when I was watching it this time how much of the movie is like improv.
Yeah.
Because he's like, there's that one where he's looking in the mirror and he's like, are you talking to me? Are you talking to me?
Are you communicating with me?
Are you communicating with me? And I just thought, like, there's no way that was written down.
Yeah, that some of Chris Rock's lines felt improvised. I swear I've never heard this line before, but we watched it this time. And when he's climbing up the tree at the end, not Chris Rock, but Farley, when he's climbing up the tree at the end, he's like, oh, my little sword. Like, he chafes his penis climbing the tree.
Because they use little sword again, a different reference.
They use it at the beginning, and yeah, I never noticed that he references his little sword at the end.
Stop thinking with your little sword. It'll be the bane of many men.
You're being led around by your little sword. Sensei is great. I wish he had a name beyond Sensei, but...
Yeah, I don't know. It just... There's so much crazy stuff that happens, like when he breaks all of the ashes, too, in the opening stuff. Yeah. And then he rubs them all over his shirt. Like, it's just like so much weird stuff happens in this movie.
Master Go! Kume! I guess they work better as a team. Just like dusted his hands off. No consequences for that, by the way.
Yeah, I think that there was no way to do it in the movie without just bringing down whatever they were trying to do.
Yeah, I feel like there's got to be a deleted scene in there where he's punished for destroying these ashes. And well, he also, destroying the... Oh, he also burns the
scrolls, and then he's just like, I think they might have a second copy.
The Holy Writ. He burns it, then drenches it in water to put out the fire and completely destroys it. I'm sure they got another one lying around. This 5,000-year-old scroll.
Yeah, I don't know. And he didn't seem that upset about any of this stuff, did he? He mourned over the losses of the ashes for like 5 seconds.
Yeah,
and he got over it.
Then he's fine.
Started thinking of his little sword again.
Yeah, the little sword takes over. It's like there's Allison and her weirdly revealing dress, and
so. She always had very short skirts on and very high heels.
Yeah,
she was really in disguise. I'm sure, like, she never dressed like
they
that.
They wanted to highlight her legs. The whole movie, like, if they could have just, if the movie could have been told from the point of view of Allison's legs, they probably would have made it work.
I wish we could have seen Chris Farley's legs a little bit more, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Get those pythons out.
Especially when he's kicking people.
I still like his outfit, too. He was wearing sandals with socks.
Yeah.
Which I know is a look that you used to rock as a young man, I believe.
Yeah, I was not afraid of the sandal with sock.
I don't think it was on your radar.
I did not know that was not okay.
Yeah, but also...
No one taught me these things.
Yeah, there should have been a guidebook for young men that Joe should have had that was like knows, and he would have known a lot of these things in his life.
Now I should publish it for other young men in my... Yeah. In my shoes.
What
so to
I
speak.
Learned.
Yeah. What I learned from being fashionably inept.
That would actually
through
be
most of
a
my
decent
life.
Book. I mean, Chris Farley could probably read it. You know, not to have that hairstyle anymore.
Well, Brad, I'm sorry. Chris Farley's dead. He can't read a book now.
He's dead?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
I know. He died like, wow. I don't know, 15 years ago now.
That's terrible.
I know. It's been a while. Go. Oh, it was actually died in 97. He died in, I read that because this was one of his last movies. He died in 97.
This movie killed him, is what you're saying.
This movie, yeah, I think the embarrassment of this movie killed him.
Wow, this is getting dark, that this is the movie that pushed him over the edge.
Do you know what his actual last movie was?
No.
Almost Heroes with Matthew Perry.
I've never seen it.
Really? It's great.
I have to go, actually, to go watch this movie.
Yeah, yeah. See you guys later. We'll pause, and then Brett will come back having seen Almost Heroes, and he'll almost be my hero. I like Almost Heroes a lot. That's kind of in the same vein as this and Tommy Boy, as far as, like, really spot-on comedic fun.
I would watch it.
I used to own it on DVD. I don't know why I got rid of it, because I always thought it was really entertaining. I gotta pick it up at some point.
Is this one of Chris Rock's, like, first movies?
This? I have no idea.
Because that scene when he's super excited about Chris Farley being a ninja is just, like, unreal to me. He's like, "You're a ninja!" Like, crazy. It's, like, the worst acting of all time.
Yeah, it's pretty over the top. It could be one of his first movies. I mean, he'd definitely been doing stand-up for a while. He'd already been on SNL by that point. But it could be one of his early movie roles, for sure.
I just think Haru's character, too, how he didn't understand any humor at all. He understands nothing. The guy calls him an asshole. He's just like, "Oh, hi, have a good day, thanks." And then he's calling people assholes and stuff, so he didn't even understand people were making fun of him the whole movie.
He just calls that one guy an asshole. It's like, just that valet at the hotel. He's asshole. For some reason, he doesn't do that throughout the rest of the movie.
They waited a long time to tie that joke together. It's like 40 minutes.
Because it's his only two interactions with that one character.
I also thought it was odd that the person who did the cleaning at the hotel was like 95 years old. Like,
someone's grandpa doesn't have anything to do at home. His wife's been gone for a few years. He's just holding on to something.
Yeah, I don't know.
So he sweeps the ground.
If I quit this job, I'll die. I must keep working. They don't even pay him, actually. He just shows up.
Yeah, he's probably like that annoying bellhops. Or no, I guess Chris Rock would be a bellhop. He would be like the manager, the desk manager. That guy, he's probably like his grandfather. I was like, yeah, he doesn't annoy anybody. He pretends to sweep. It's fine.
They gave him a fake broom.
He thinks it's 1934, and I pay him 12 cents a day.
We give him a chicken at the end of the week. He loves it.
That explains why there's wild chickens running around this hotel.
Yeah, exactly. Where are those wild chickens from?
They were grandpa's pay.
It all makes sense now, Joe. You figured it out.
I figured it all together. I'm sure there's things in this movie I won't be able to explain, though.
I did see something that's like trending socially now that I don't remember at the time when Chris Farley comes out in that pimp suit. He makes like a duck face type thing as trying to be sexy.
Oh.
97. I don't remember people making duck faces to try to be sexy like girls until like the last 5-6 years.
I don't know. When was Zoolander? Because Zoolander kind of did the sexy duck face.
Yeah, that is kind of a duck face. I don't know.
Zoolander was on the Ben Stiller show before that, and I think that was 90s, late 90s. So it's possible this was a thing already.
So he originated Blue Steel.
He's doing Blue Steel.
Before.
Let us know, Internet, who did Blue Steel better? Who did it first?
Yes, that's a good contest. Because Chris Farley, I mean, you got to catch it because it's only a couple seconds, but it's good. Yeah. It's real good.
Yeah. He could stop a throwing star with that look.
I felt movement, my little sword.
I think it moved.
I've shifted before. This was a move. I talked about this last time, I know for sure, that Chris Farley, for being a huge guy, is in amazing physical shape.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, he is such an athlete.
The things he's able to do is incredible.
I've still never done a cartwheel to this day, and I look like I could, but Chris Farley looks like he could not, and he can do tons of them.
Yeah. He's kind of like the kingpin. It's like, he looks really fat, but it's all muscle and, you know, toned and ready for action.
Yeah, I don't know. We also were watching Go Bay go through his many different characters in this movie effortlessly.
Maybe my favorite aspect of the movie is Go Bay. Well, there's a few things, but Go Bay's always around, so he plays into all my favorite things about the movie. And his various disguises are a real treat. We were talking about in the hibachi scene where he's dressed as a woman and a customer at Haru's table and disguised so perfectly that Haru does not recognize him.
And he also is making small chatter with the women next to him, and they have no idea probably that he's a man. So he's just like effortlessly in this costume.
Yeah, and you speculated that like he had gone out and made those friends and arranged for them to have lunch together.
Did you see that though? They were like laughing and giggling. There's multiple scenes where if you watch the screen, you could see them conversing.
Yeah. So in Gobe's downtime, while like Haru is sleeping or eating, he's out perfecting these characters.
Mingling.
Yeah.
He's just making friends. He doesn't even want to go home.
I'm not sure he wants to find Allison either. He just like wanders around. If he finds her, fine. But
I just
if not,
can't believe how confident you have to be. If you're a man dressed as a woman and you've never done it before, now you're pretending to be a woman and talking to strangers that you don't. It makes no sense. You try to just blend in and be quiet.
But, you know, that's not good enough for Gobei. He's got to create this character. He's got to.
I like halfway through the movie, we find out that Allison Page is the female's real name, and Haru is just shocked by this. And one of the things I noticed this time is he opens up a card from Allison's mom, because apparently it's her birthday too, and it just says, "I love you, happy birthday." And I was just thinking, like, she must not be close with her mother at all.
Well, as we know, Allison's sister has been murdered, so maybe the mom is not all there anymore. Maybe she's just, "Happy birthday, Allison, I love you, but I'm dead inside."
Or maybe Gobei planted that card. It's not even her birthday. He just wanted Haru to know for sure that her name was Allison.
That's a fun theory, too. Haru's not getting it that this woman's name is Allison Page.
So Gobei thought of the perfect way. Only her mother would call her by her real name.
He's got to make it super obvious for Haru. Because everyone that Allison knows other than Haru is calling her Allison. "Your lies bounce off me like ping pong balls, Allison Page." Is that racist? I don't know. Maybe.
The other thing, too, I was thinking about is ninjas I always think of as stealthy and quiet. And I know that Haru's played by like not a typical ninja because he's just screaming all the time. But even Gobei, when he gets like flung off roofs or anything, like ninjas do not make noise.
And he's the top of his class.
That's what I'm saying. He's the best ninja in the universe.
He's the best ninja of that year.
Well, I'm going with of the universe.
Okay.
Ninja of the universe.
I am one with the universe, and Gobei is the best ninja in that.
Yeah, he can go to some plane where he can talk to people and stuff. That's pretty good.
Even Haru can do that. So that must be really easy to do.
I think they weren't going to do that, and then they had to write it into the movie because it wouldn't make sense without it.
Yeah, it does feel tacked on because, like, we need this scene between Haru and Sensei. How are we going to make that happen? I don't know. Astral projection? That's a thing ninja do, right?
A lot of the movie feels that way, where they're just like, look, I was like that one scene where they need to capture Allison, and she's just in a random phone booth in the middle of nowhere making a call in front of them.
Yeah, I think there were random phone booths like on the street in Los Angeles in Beverly Hills in the 90s, because there's another movie I like a lot called Brick. And there's a random phone booth on the side of a street in that, but it's not the 90s.
The same trick twice,
but it's old fashioned. Yeah, or they just put a phone booth where they need it. Yeah, could be just a convenient phone booth.
Yeah, you
maybe
know.
Maybe I just think there were phone booths everywhere.
Were you watching like Superman? And
they do this
a place
in movies. Yeah, they just do it in movies, so I assume that's real life.
But yeah, there's a lot of random noises in this movie, like the whole scene where he's breaking in to see Allison. He pulls a satellite dish off the roof and it comes cluttering down to the ground. There's like a dog chasing him, barking the whole time.
Yeah, no one notices that they're being infiltrated.
A grown man falls off the roof. Just lots of things.
God, that's a really funny moment to me when he grapples Gobei's leg and climbs up on him and then is swinging around over Allison's balcony, and then Gobei finally loses his grip and falls, dropping Haru onto her chair, and immediately he goes,
"Yeah, that's where his, why did Gobei yell? Like, he hasn't made any, he's been a perfect ninja this whole movie," and then they were just like, "This part's not funny at all, just yell."
Well, even Gobei is no match for Haru.
Haru doesn't hear him either, does he?
No, he doesn't notice anything. No one notices anything.
Actually, Haru doesn't notice anything the whole movie, ever, so it's not a surprise.
Not really, but yeah, that cracks me up. Everything with Gobei cracks me up.
Thought too, so Haru's character looks like he actually got a job at that Chinese restaurant, right? It doesn't, because everybody seems to see him there and stuff, and nobody says anything. So he went out and he got the job somehow.
Do you think he's like he's imitating someone who works there? Like he imitates the ink specialist?
Probably is. Like, there's somebody in the back who has a mustache like that, or like that goes all the way down and curls,
like a massive Fu Manchu mustache, and his role model. Just this fat white guy with a fake Fu Manchu mustache named Harry, who works at this restaurant. And Haru's like, "That's my guy."
That makes sense why he got hired. He looked exactly like him.
And then everyone just goes along with it. It's like, oh, what's Harry up to now?
But I was wondering that during the movie, like, how did he get the job? He has absolutely, he's terrible at the job. He cooks one of the lady's scarves. I mean, I'm no Chinese chef, but I wouldn't cook someone's scarf.
Japanese chef.
Sorry, yeah. Joe.
There is a difference, Brett.
I apologize to any Chinese or Japanese people listening that were offended.
I dated a Chinese girl once, and she was super racist against Japanese people. Just hated
her. I dated a Japanese girl once, or at least I think she was. So I'm so racist on it. Maybe she was Chinese. I don't know.
Did she? Well, you can tell by who she hated. Did she hate the Chinese?
I didn't have a conversation with her of who she hated. I should have. That's
Good. Man. That's like first date material. Yeah.
Who do you hate?
Who do you hate? Yeah.
That's the only way you can tell. Yes, I know she's Japanese or Chinese now. I've solved it.
There's a great Daniel Tosh joke. He's like, I don't date Chinese girls because that's a huge red flag.
What about Japanese girls?
They're fine.
He probably doesn't know the difference.
Yeah, they're fine. That's just a little red flag.
It's a huge red flag. Right.
I don't remember a lot of Tosh's stand-up, but that joke is always stuck in my memory. It's really good. What else with Gobei? It feels like he's constantly doing amazing things. I love when he puts Joey to sleep and drives Haru to the evil warehouse.
Yeah, you know, those scenes only work because I was thinking about this too. Haru will take that blindfold off for nothing. Yeah. He thinks he's being attacked by sea monsters at one point. He never takes the blindfold off. Like, it's so genius.
No, he's got to trust his perfect ninja sense memory.
Yeah, because when Gobei's driving, he's like, we're going the wrong way. You're way off. And then he just gets out. We're at the serpent's lair.
So we've entered the serpent's lair.
He doesn't realize that Joey's sleeping either.
Here's another line there. I think when he notices Joey sleeping, he says, oh, Joey, you are a fragile boy.
Yeah, that's another thing. Chris Rock's 32 years old in this movie, but he's just a fragile boy. But we didn't talk about the scene at all where they go see Will Sasso's character.
Oh, yeah. We hit on him imitating the Ink Special. The Ink Special is played by Will Sasso. God, that's so funny. That whole section of the movie is so funny to me. It's maybe the one thing Haru is really good at as a ninja is playing this yes. guy. He's weird.
He was made to be that guy. They can be best friends.
He's weirdly good at imitating this character, this Will Sasso character.
I realized this time watching it, because I thought my favorite line was when Will Sasso was like, nice coat, who shot the couch?
Yeah.
But my favorite line is when Haru says it to like the money counterfeiter. I mean, the guy's wearing a regular gray suit. Just thinking, if you were wearing a suit and you were self-conscious at all, like just a regular suit, someone said that to you, you would never wear that suit again.
Yeah.
Ever.
Because the joke is that the pattern of his pimp coat is so ridiculous.
He doesn't get the jokes at all anyone's using.
He seems to get some of the jokes.
Right, because he says a lot of jokes, actually, but he doesn't get that one.
I'm trying to remember other jokes he says in there. When he gets blindfolded, he's like, yeah, I don't mind, but who's going to drive? How's he going to drive with that thing on?
Or that stupid joker. I think I got bit by a bug. You can blindfold my brother. Bring him over here. Kill everything.
I love that. Yeah. You should give my brother a call. He's in pest control. You can blindfold him. Bring him over here. I'll nuke every cockroach in this place.
He really liked being blindfolded.
I think he's in his element when he's blindfolded. Maybe it's a metaphor for...
He's blindfolded a lot in this movie, actually.
He blindfolds himself. He gets blindfolded. It's just a metaphor for how he chooses to not see things in the world.
Oh, I also wrote down this movie has the most classic fish fight scene.
Oh, where he's fighting. What kind of fish is that? It's like giant mackerel or something.
Steelhead or salmon or something. Mm. I don't know, but we found his weapon of choice because he's bad with all other weapons, but he seemed pretty good with the fish.
Yeah, he was a born fish fighter. He starts whipping her around like his broadswords.
And you think about it, he had other things. He had knives. And he had that's that a really thing he good was point. Flipping
yeah.
stuff with. But he chose the fish. He knew that he had trained and he was ready and he could fight with fish.
He had actual weapons. And then, he chooses to fight with a fish. So ridiculous. Yeah,
that laughing mushroom scene's got to be like the best, though.
Yeah, when they're talking about how, the whole evil plan and how... Tanley's gonna come and kill them all, and
Tanley killed her sister. He's probably gonna kill you. And she was laughing at that too.
Yeah, they're all laughing.
Yeah, Tanley killed your sister, and she's like, "Oh,
So funny. Yeah, that's he also, totally did murder my sister.
That's also when Haru's so smooth. That's like his smoothest part.
Oh, where he collapses on top of her?
That should go in Joe's book, too. How to be super smooth with a woman. Collapse on top of her and then say you didn't want to enter the temple. You just wanted to worship a little at the outside.
Yeah, maybe glance a peek at the sacred object.
He's so smooth. Smooth as ice.
Which of her sacred objects is he referring to?
That escalated really quickly, though, in that scene, because I thought he was just trying to kiss her, but apparently he might have had some, like, his little sword out, too, or something.
Could
he
be.
He was trying to do a kiss slash inner, like, little, little sword at the same time.
Little kiss penetration.
Nice. Kiss penetration. Put that in the book. Don't do this.
This is a weird book.
Yeah, first kiss should not be first penetration either.
No. Okay. That would be awkward.
Some people might not know it, though, Joe.
Okay.
Just think back to the 16-year-old, 17-year-old you. Did you know that?
I probably did know that. Didn't know I wasn't supposed to wear socks with sandals.
No, trust me. He didn't know. He can't hear this because I'm whispering. It's fine. How long do you think this movie took to make?
I don't know. It's pretty basic. I'd say like 6 weeks. I have no idea.
How much drugs did Chris Farley do when he was making this movie?
Oh, he was drugged out of his mind, I'm sure, the whole time. I forget what his drug of choice was. What did he OD on?
Probably heroin.
Was it heroin?
I don't know, heroin, cocaine, you know, those are the two good ones.
Yeah.
All the rest are just child's play. Were him and Chris Rock friends at all?
Yeah, because Chris Farley only wanted to do this movie if Chris Rock was in it.
Oh.
He insisted on it.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know about that. Chris Rock struggled in this movie.
Yeah, this is not his best performance. He's much better playing himself on Louis.
I wonder if Chris Farley wanted him, though, for his improv skills. If he needed help with his lines or other people's lines, he wanted somebody creative there.
Could be. I assume they were just friends. They got along and he wanted him in the movie. Wanted to make a movie with his friend.
Yeah. I had a lot more questions this time watching the movie. So at the end when Gobei comes in on the forklift at the factory.
Yeah.
I just fantasized that he actually got a job there, got forklift certified. You know, he might stay. Like, he just, other people saw him there too. It looked like he actually had a job there.
He can make a real career out of this forklifting. That's what I'm saying.
Is like, they both did really well. They got jobs. Gobei made friends. It's just like,
America's the land of opportunity,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They blended in so well.
A little too well.
Yeah, in that same scene where they're in the warehouse and stuff too, when Haru thinks that he's, like, escaped the villains and he locks him in that room and he exits. There's like a Japanese basketball squad waiting for him there in matching tracksuits. And somehow he instantly knows this is trouble. Like, I don't know if he thought maybe he was getting free tickets to a basketball game or something, but
maybe he has those latent ninja intuition moments.
I do notice that though, all ninjas have to wear the same outfit, right? Because in that movie, Three Ninjas, the enemy ninjas are all dressed in kind of like black tracksuit type things.
I think black is standard, yeah.
But these guys were wearing maroon.
Oh, I didn't notice. Maroon
tracksuits, all matching. Didn't notice.
So,
doesn't recognize fashion.
They're not ninjas, though. They're Yakuza. So they know martial arts, but they're not ninja.
Thank you, Joe. Sorry. So I just assumed that
Yakuza wear maroon tracksuits. I thought Yakuza
meant evil ninja. That's what I thought. What's the translation?
Yakuza's a Japanese mobster, basically.
So mobsters wear tracksuits, not ninjas. That's true.
Yeah, that's true. That tracks across all mobsters.
Actually, yeah, you're right. I always thought, like, I want a cool tracksuit just so I look dangerous. Because people always think either you're really athletic or you're dangerous when you wear a tracksuit.
Or both. You can't be really dangerous without being athletic.
You have a gun.
Nah, we're too desensitized to guns.
Mm-hmm.
Tracksuit's where it's at. That's where the intimidation comes in.
Yeah, do you want to go tracksuit shopping?
Sure, yeah.
Yes!
I feel like when I played Grand Theft Auto, my guy was always in a tracksuit.
Yeah.
Or like a suit. Like when I made enough money or could get into a nice suit place, I would dress him up to the nines.
There's that one movie with Ben Affleck when he's kind of like a bank robber or whatever.
The Town?
The Town, and they wear tracksuits in that, especially Ben Affleck's character. A lot. And I was just like, man, it's still cool. All of these years, villains have always been wearing tracksuits. Adidas, too, I think, in that one. Or maybe it's Puma, but still, it's like, it's so sweet.
Yeah, we should get tracksuits.
Gosh, matching tracksuits. So badass in matching tracksuits. Our whole family.
No one would fuck with us.
Yeah, we would look so dangerous if our entire family had a Christmas card with all tracksuits.
Sounding better and better.
You know, I am reading some notes here now that Gobei probably can't stay in the U.S. because I think he's probably wanted. He did escape from jail.
That's right. Yeah, he was arrested by Chris Farley's brothers.
And he was complaining to Sensei that now he had to break out of prison, which wasn't a problem for him at all.
Yeah.
That would have been a good scene in the movie, probably.
To see his prison break?
Something.
I would have liked that.
Or how the suspect was a large, fat white man, and they captured a small Japanese man, and they still in convicted him. Actually, I guess he wasn't convicted. He was just thrown in prison.
Yeah, he would have been cleared probably immediately. It's like, this isn't the guy we're looking for. There's something about him that doesn't quite track.
Yeah, I don't know.
Can't quite put my finger on it, but my gut's telling me that this is not the guy.
I'm no Sherlock Holmes, but something doesn't add up here, Watson.
I actually didn't know Chris Farley had a brother until like 2 weeks ago. Like, I saw him in something. I was like, man, that guy looks like Chris Farley. And I looked it up. I was like, oh, it is Chris Farley. It's Chris Farley's brother. I forget his name now.
Is he good?
Yeah. He acts a lot. He directs.
That reminds me of the one time I thought I got a movie with Morgan Freeman in it. It was Morgan Freeman's son.
I didn't know Morgan Freeman had a son. I didn't know he acted
exactly
either.
Exactly the same.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Exactly the same. They just, yeah. Except Morgan Freeman's super old now.
Yeah. He's really up there now. But, yeah, Chris Farley's brother doesn't rub it in your face like John Belushi does.
Yeah.
Or Jim Belushi, which is the bad one.
the other thing, too, is at what point was the sensei proud of Haru's character in this that he calls him a ninja? Like, what did Haru do?
Yeah, because...
I think they just needed it for the storyline.
Yeah.
But then he has, like, Overnight Express delivered his ninja suit and amulet.
Overnight? It's over dream sequence.
Well, somehow. He probably had Gobei. Like, Gobei had it on him the whole time, just in case.
He could have sent it to Gobei. It's like, it's Haru's time. Give him his great white ninja outfit that we had specially made for him. And, you know, set it up in his room. Make it look nice. Make it look fancy. Make him feel special.
You notice by the end that the white ninja suit's so dirty it's almost black?
Yeah.
I never noticed that before.
Yeah, it gets real messed up. Real dirty.
One of the things that cracked me up is Haru's confidence in his bomb defusing skills in this movie. Like, I understand overconfidence. Trust me, I suffer from it. But if I see a bomb that's going to go off and I have no skills in defusing this bomb, I'm not going to be like... No problem, I can defuse it. And he sticks his hands through there and he defuses the bomb and then he finds out it's just a telephone, which is something I would do also.
I see. It is simple now. It's all so clear to me. I have done it. He just rips a phone apart.
Yeah. Also, too, he's just so ambitious. Like the part where he was about to kiss her and he thought he was going to have sexual relations with her. Mm-hmm. And he also had a pet name for her instantly, My Dove.
Yeah, which she never objects to. I think she likes it.
You think she does? I don't know. This is also should go in Joe's book. Because I don't think she liked it.
I mean, it's hard to say. She doesn't object to it, but maybe it's just, you know, the state of society in the 90s that women weren't supposed to object to men's sexual harassment.
No, well, it was supposed to be. It wasn't sexual harassment. It's just odd that he made up a name for her. My Dove. My Dove.
Maybe he's embarrassed because he can't remember which is her real name.
That actually makes sense.
And he doesn't want to call her the wrong name, so he calls her My Dove the whole time.
He's about it. He's like, is it Allison or Sally? I don't know. I wish I had that birthday card still.
Give me like a cheat sheet.
Also, too, I know Chris Farley does this, but I didn't notice until some of the scenes when he's running that he swings his head violently side to side.
Yeah.
And he's running so much more funny. I think Jim Carrey does that, too, as kind of
sometimes he does
Dumb and Dumber type character and his Ace Ventura.
I wonder what the reason for that is. It is funny to watch, but it's
nobody
just more,
does
nothing
that.
More physical.
Nobody
to do.
Does it. It makes you dizzy if you're just like swinging your head back and forth. Yeah. And then we were talking about this time. How Haru saves the day and he gets the bomb in the villain's vehicle. And I didn't recognize this the first time, but the bomb goes off and the villain doesn't even die who's in the car.
No, yeah.
With the bomb.
It's like, I know that a bomb, like all of the explosion, the pressure goes in one direction generally. So maybe it just happened to lean up and most of the pressure went up and it saved him, but it should have been a big enough bomb.
But what about the gas in the car, Joe?
That's up front.
I think the flames would have reached it somehow. I don't know. I'm just thinking.
Maybe he escaped.
I think he's just really bad at making bombs. He's a money counterfeiter, not a bomb maker, because that bomb would not have taken that factory down.
So he's as good a bomb maker as Haru is as good a ninja.
Yeah. Or maybe he contracted Haru, who was a bomb. He was pretending to be a bomb maker, and Haru purposely made the bomb not very well.
Man, there's all kinds of stuff in this movie that we don't.
This is a really complicated movie, actually. If you
there's a lot
make
going
it that
on.
Way.
Yeah.
If you want to make it that way, there's a lot.
You can read a lot into it. But yeah, he has the confidence of a great bomb maker, but he's not one.
No.
So yeah, he for some reason walks away from the explosion in the back of the truck.
Yeah, he should have died. Like, why couldn't they have killed him?
I don't know.
The character, like,
doesn't. Well, written. I guess people do die. Nameless people die in this movie, but no one important dies.
He had it written in his contract that he must live till the end of the movie.
Maybe.
Brought to trial.
I will do this movie if I survive to the end.
Yeah, like, why would they not just kill him there?
I don't know. That was weird.
Because I could see that if, or maybe there's like, I don't know if in 97 you kind of had a limit on how many people you wanted to die in a PG-13 movie.
Maybe.
Because they did kill at least 5 to 6 people.
Yeah, there are dead bodies. There are murders.
Because those were just drones, but this was an actual human being. He was in the movie. He had a girlfriend.
Plus he's white. Can't just kill white people in a movie.
I am a little suspect of Allison, though. I don't trust her.
Yeah.
What was her plan here? I think she was liking the shopping and the fancy dinners.
Yeah, her whole plan is weird in this, and I can't really explain most of it. Because she hires Haru, or doesn't hire him, enlists Haru's help to get some dirt on her boyfriend, who she believes killed her sister, who used to be his girlfriend. So it's super weird for me that she is dating her, who she believes is her sister's killer, and sleeping with him, and, you know. And
she never gave us any evidence of him killing her sister. Like, what, she could have had one line, like, she told me he was abusive to her.
Yeah.
Something. There was nothing the card could have said. And actually, that wouldn't make any sense for her mom to know. Silly mom.
The card could have said, happy birthday, I love you. By the way, your boyfriend killed your sister.
Right. That's what my mind went to. I was like, her mom should have said something about it. I was like, that makes no sense at all. Thank you. I'm glad I stopped myself. And then you told everybody what I was going to say. Right. He's been doing that for many years.
It made me laugh. I thought it should be committed to video recording tape. I don't know why she thought the best plan for getting dirt on this guy was to start fucking him. She's got some real dark stuff going on.
She was going to figure it out. She was just like, I'll just start with this. I'll start with the sex and see where it goes.
Yeah, start with the sex and the spending account and the car and the house.
And this guy has no idea either.
And then eventually I'll take him down.
Wait, she was using her real name.
Yeah.
So how did this guy not know that they were sisters?
He probably doesn't know either of their last names.
He probably doesn't care. No. But he didn't know that she had a sister even, right?
Yeah.
He must not have.
It's a good point. She should have given him a fake name.
I don't think she was trying to catch him. Then all of a sudden the Haru thing, actually, she probably was helping him in the beginning.
Yeah.
Like setting up Haru. And then he came to the U.S. and she was like, oh, what do I do now? Let's just see how this pans out.
That's a much better explanation than what happens in the movie. This
movie's very complicated.
I think she doesn't even have a sister.
Wow. Now that would be good. Because she would not use her real name if she's planning on just like sneaking into this guy's life and then catching him. The other day, I made up a name for myself in some chat that I was using. I used to came up with Johnny. I feel like that's the reverse of Brett, is Johnny.
There are chat rooms still?
Just for like, not chat rooms, for like sometimes I get in companies' chats to find out more information about products that I have to sell.
I gotcha.
So I got in there and I felt like they were like not doing it because of my name or something because it took me forever to get in. So I changed it to Johnny. That's the reverse of Brett, if anyone's wondering. Johnny.
It's the reverse of Brett?
Yeah, feel free to give me any names and I'll give you the reverse name of that name.
What's the reverse of my name?
Joe Malcolm.
Hey, that tracks.
Or Maxim.
I can't think of
Maximilian. Maximilian.
Max.
Maximus. Maximus. It takes me a little bit.
I liked Malcolm better.
Nah, Malcolm's. It's too much like Joe. Maximus.
Oh, I guess I'm glad I'm like a Malcolm.
You're Maximus. Maximus. Your alter ego Maximus is like super smooth. Doesn't wear socks with sandals. Wears suits. He's like Archer, basically.
He penetrates on the first kiss.
Yes, exactly. That is you. See, you get it now. So yeah, anybody whose name you want a reverse name of that, it's really easy for me. It's a gift.
What's Haru? What's the opposite of Haru?
Ooh, that's not a non-English name. I'm not versed in that very well.
If it helps, Haru means spring in Japanese.
I think the reverse is Joe.
Whoa, we're getting trippy now.
No, the reverse would be Gobei.
Oh,
easy. Large, fat, white ninja. Small, Asian, dark ninja.
I think it's offensive to say that white and Asian are opposites of each other.
Joe, don't question my methods, okay? I'm the one who's like, it's a scientific method here. It's not about racism. It's about science.
You are the self-proclaimed master of...
Reverse names.
Reverse names.
I want to go down in history as that, the reverse name specialist.
All right, well, keep putting that out in the universe and see what happens.
Put it out there in the universe. Tell your friends.
Oh, what else about the movie you want to talk about?
There is the most epic male on male scissor kick in history.
When Nobu and random henchmen attack Gobei and Haru.
I really hope they stop doing that move in movies. It's been so overdone. The two people duck and the bad ninjas kick each other. Even though this one they added in the scissoring, so it was kind of, you know, a little bit.
It was kind of romantic.
there might have been a kiss. There might have been
some. They were totally going to make out
little
after
sword
that.
Touching. I don't know.
There was definitely a little sword touching.
I didn't
touching.
Zoom in on it. Pause it and see what happened. I mean, I could. I'm not saying I'm going to do that when I get home.
I didn't watch it 12 times in slow motion.
I didn't do that. I didn't scene by scene it just to make sure that no tips touched.
Nobu, because obviously Gobei is from Mortal Kombat. He plays Liu Kang in Mortal Kombat. Nobu is also in Mortal Kombat in both movies.
Who's Nobu?
The Tandy's like Asian henchman guy.
Oh, nice.
His main henchman.
They might be friends.
Yeah, I'm sure they go way
All
back.
All Asians are friends, not racist. They are.
But in the first movie, he plays Reptile. And in the second movie, he plays Sub-Zero.
So he's always an evil guy.
Yeah, so he's a bad guy.
Why does he always have to play evil people?
I don't know. He's got kind of a, you know, a rat face.
That's racist.
Like beady eyes.
That's not racist. That's a facist.
It's not racist or facist.
It's a mean.
Or fascist.
It's
or meanist.
Something. Somebody give me a word.
It's not somethingist.
Bad with words.
I'm just describing what his face looks like. He's got these little beady eyes and this pointed nose.
After all, everything I said, I agree. Go on.
So yeah, he gets cast as villains.
I wouldn't trust that guy at all. He's very evil looking.
Although now I want to see a romantic comedy with him in it.
He looks like the evil character in Aladdin, Nafar.
Jafar.
Jafar. That's who he looks like to me. He's the human. He's the actual.
I don't think he looks anything like Jafar. Jafar's a different race
you're
for
have
one.
To cut this later.
He's really tall.
You have to cut it. Just cut it. You can't disagree with me. He looks exactly like Jafar. Everyone agrees with me here.
All right. You have the best
words. You know
what
the reverse name of Jafar is?
What?
Aladdin. Get it again. This is easy.
Are you saying that I have an arch enemy out there somewhere called Maximus?
No, I was just thinking like the reverse of you, and I think it's like the 300 characters in his name, Maximus.
No, you're thinking of the gladiator character is Maximus.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So you're the reverse of Maximus, the gladiator character.
I don't remember what the 300 character's name was.
Yeah, you didn't either, else I would have used that, because that's a good reverse for you, too. You just have to find, like, a name. Oh, I can't tell my secrets, never mind. I can't do it. I can only know them.
Then that keeps you as the world's foremost expert on
exactly.
reverse names, if no one knows the secrets.
Exactly, Joe. You understand now how hard it's been for me to keep this secret so long.
You're like the great white ninja. Some say it to be so.
The average white ninja. Average white non-ninja.
Yeah.
That's me.
You're excessively middling.
Yeah.
I like when Allison comes to the Takagura Dojo to enlist a ninja. She almost sits on a ninja star. And he says, whoa. And he whips it over his shoulder cavalierly and nails it right in the face of this painting. And she says, it's very impressive. He turns around with a look on his face and utters a surprise.
Wait, so that's kind of showing, though, that he knows he's bad at ninja skills. Yet the whole movie, he doesn't act like he
I
does.
Don't think at that moment he knows he's bad at ninja skills. I just think he was not intending to do that. It was just like a happy accident that could happen to anyone.
Also, in that scene, he tells us that he scored his highest marks in stealth, which in the movie, he's not good at all. He gets caught on a fence or a...
He's in a bush. Or are you talking about when the sensei's walking around and he pops out at him?
No, when he made that fake chicken or whatever. No, I'm talking about when his ninja outfit gets caught on that little hook on that gate.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, and then he just hangs there. That look like his facial expressions are really good in this movie, though.
Yeah, I love when he comes back out on the gate and he just looks so defeated. It's like, Haru, you fucking idiot.
But then 2 seconds later, he's in a little boat.
Hey! 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 But I do like when he's disguised as the bush with the bird on his head and he's flapping its wings. I kept waiting for that kind of stuff to come into play later in the movie, whereas like he has this little ingenuity to him that he can make work and, you know, incorporate into his ninja-ness. But nah, he never does anything like that.
You know what? Oh, I'm just thinking now, someone developed that prop. They were super excited, like, oh, he'll hide in this bush with this, like, kind of cool-looking chicken that has flappable wings. Like, that took somebody a lot of time to make, probably.
I'm just glad the sensei didn't catch the chicken and rip its head off, because that's how you learn how to rip a man's head off, is you rip chicken's heads off.
Yeah, just cut that, Joe. It's not good. That was the one comment I'm choosing that you need to cut. I get one comment, right, that's cuttable from you?
Yeah, you can veto something I say.
It's in my contract, thank you. Joe's dog tried to eat me today. That's a true story. Someone help me.
She's gotten real bitey lately.
She was trying to bite me. It's true. I'm going to press charges, and I'm going to take his Bob's Burgers paintings that he has. It's worth it.
We don't have to get the lawyers involved. You can have that.
That was easy.
I like that in the ancient writ, there is a legend of the sensei hooking up with twin 18-year-old geishas, which again, the plural of geisha is geisha.
Either that or Haru made that up because he can't read whatever language that is. There's yeah. no chance he can read that.
Because he's pointing at like blank space, like, ah, oh, here it is.
It looked like a bunch of signatures, actually.
Kind of did, yeah. It didn't look like Japanese language at all. Just like random scribbling. I was like, oh no, this is the writ of the sensei and the 2018. I think
they were
geisha.
A little self-conscious that the movie wasn't going to be that funny, so they added in these random little quirky funny moments like that where the scroll of the twin geisha.
Yeah. I like the idea that this event was so epic that they felt the need to include it in this 5,000-year-old
scroll. Yeah, it had to be really old, right?
Yeah. But I didn't know if it was like this sensei from when he was a younger man or it was an old sensei.
I'm assuming that it's an older sensei.
I guess because geisha is not really a modern thing. It's more of a 100-year-ago thing.
The other thing too about this movie, how did Haru get in that little chest? I'm confused. There was like a shipwreck and his parents
at the beginning?
To put him in a chest.
Oh, maybe it's like a Superman analog. I was like, the parents see the ship is going down, so they put him in a light.
It had to have been some kind of superhero reference type thing. Like, why else would you put your baby in a chest before the ship went down?
I mean, yeah, because it would float and there's a chance it would be safe.
Oh my gosh. So Joe agrees with the parents that if he's in a shipwreck, he's going to put his child in a small wooden chest.
And yeah.
Okay.
Great. I probably would, yeah. So he has a chance to become a great white ninja warrior. Okay. That's all any parent wants for his son.
Yeah, but his parents, it looked like there was nobody on that boat, though, right? They don't show anyone. It just goes down.
They don't show anyone else, no. It's like, presumably they got sucked out, died, or still on the boat and dead. I don't know.
Or they faked the whole thing just to get rid of their son.
Could be, yeah. That's maybe the most plausible because the boat's there.
Yeah, so they knew their son was going to be how he turned out.
Yeah.
From the beginning.
They could sense his importance.
Yeah, his importance.
They're as good at being parents as Haru is at being a ninja.
What did he do? He stopped some kingpin from having sex with some innocent girl more and stopped him from counterfeiting Chinese money. Like, why was it Chinese money? Why wasn't it U.S. money so he was more of a villain to the U.S.?
Well, I have no idea.
They just had the plates laying around in the prop room, and they're just
think,
like, these are Chinese plates.
Yeah, I don't know what the reasoning behind doing Chinese yen over American money would be. Maybe it's easier to counterfeit Chinese
They needed a reason currency. To explain why she was at the dojo.
Because they would have had to have been, like, in China, and she...
They had. That's the only to place make you the can deal. Get. Is it China or is it Japan?
Oh, that's right. It would be Japan, wouldn't it? Yeah, because it's definitely Chinese currency, I think. Yen is Chinese.
I agree. I concur.
I'm pretty sure yen is Chinese. But maybe they popped over to Japan for some dealings with the Yakuza, because those are Japanese. That's Japanese.
Nailed it. Either way, I think it would have been more villainous if they would have been counterfeiting U.S. money.
It's more thematic to do. Well, maybe it's not, because everything's Japanese. It's not more thematic to do Chinese. I don't know.
He's not even a hero in my eyes, barely.
Yeah, he thwarts a very small crime, a white-collar crime.
That guy, honestly, that guy was never going to pull it off.
And he was going to, well, he was going to murder the girl, so that's something.
Yeah, just because Haru came along. She was just going to keep shopping and having sex with him and be fine her whole life. They probably would have had, like, three kids. Would have been great. He probably would have set, like, at some point in his 40s, he might have been in his 40s, I don't know, realized, you know, that crime wasn't everything, committed to her, and
he has more money than he could ever spend,
right? And they would have had just a great life. Instead, she's going to be like, because Rue has, he only's got a few gold coins left, and he has no skills whatsoever that we've seen, so he can't,
he has no marketable skills. He could probably go into ink management. He's pretty good at faking that ink expertise.
And the only ability she has at all is long legs. Yeah. We've seen, right?
That's her only skill. Yeah,
she doesn't do anything.
Legs to her chin. That's all.
Well,
she's
does she
got.
Have any skills that we see in the movie?
No, I don't think she has a job. I don't
she
think she's
claims
like a reporter
say she
or anything.
Could cook lunch for him at some point.
So maybe she can cook, kind of.
She's definitely good at shopping though, because she has a lot of great outfits in this movie.
She's good at counting down clocks. Maybe, maybe she could be an on-air reporter for like New Year's.
Yeah, she could. She's got the looks for it. She could be a news anchor woman.
This was strange to me about the bomb. It starts at 12 minutes, and then it takes 2 minutes for Haru to get to her. Like, and a ton of stuff happens in between him starting the bomb and Haru, like, driving there, doing the tree thing, and, like, making his way up to Allison. And then he disarms it and loses 5 minutes.
Well, the thing is the scene when he first goes there, it really does only take on screen like less than a minute. So we don't know how far away this thing is. And I actually timed it last time, I remember, some of the 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was less than 5 minutes, I believe, like the whole scene.
The 5 minutes do go pretty fast.
Even though he's getting upstairs and downstairs really fast, I noticed this time. But somehow the timing is not as far-fetched as I thought it was going to be.
But the 2 minutes at the beginning is really, really way too long. And then it takes a minute for him to, like, cross a platform and look down at Gobei fighting. Like, he goes, how much time? 5 minutes. And he's like, I will be back. And he goes over and looks at Gobei. And how much time? 4 minutes. I'm like, that was fast.
Because Gobei's about to be killed.
Yeah.
We're seeing, right? He's about to get, like, an axe to the head.
Yeah. And even though it makes no sense, I love that scene where Haru steps up and kicks all the Yuki. His ass.
No one messes with my brother.
Yeah.
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
And then he like punt kicks the one guy in the chest. And my favorite one is where he whips off his belt and like wraps around the guy's throat and kicks him in the face from behind. Awesome.
Yeah, I do like the music for this movie a lot. I think we talked about that. The cool beats and stuff for the fight scenes. And then.
Yeah, I think the score was actually also the guy who did Mortal Kombat.
That would make sense because it was good, because those fight scenes are pretty bad. Without the right music, they would be unwatchable.
Yeah, they really elevate them because it's just, a lot of quick cuts and punching. And
that's like Joe's fourth or fifth reference to Mortal Kombat, by the way. I think he really wants to watch that movie today.
If it's still on Netflix.
That can't be a guilty pleasure. Right? That's actually a good movie.
Mortal Kombat?
Don't laugh. That's a good movie.
I mean, I think it's another nostalgia pick.
I'm sure our viewers would agree.
It's definitely my favorite movie adapted from a video game. They have not cracked the code on doing that as of yet.
I have a confession to make that I just realized.
Okay.
I own the Mortal Kombat soundtrack CD.
Ooh, I want it.
You can't have it. It's very important to me.
Well, I just want to make a copy of it. Like, just put it on my iTunes.
Should we be telling people about this? You can't just make copies of CDs you don't own, Joe. This is illegal.
Well, then why does iTunes let me do it?
Because you're a ninja.
Well, I'm not gonna burn a copy.
We'll just cut all this anyway. It's fine.
Yeah, I just want to put it on my computer.
Yeah, you can have it, Joe.
Yes. It's fine. Great. I really just want the one song, the like theme song.
But yeah,
Rated.
So I
Johnny Cage.
I would never do the guilty pleasure with you on that because I'd be offended.
To call it a guilty pleasure.
Mm-hmm. I would actually make a podcast about you making it, saying that it's stupid that you're doing it. And I would have all my friends.
I'm only going to do it when you break down and come and do it with me.
Okay, I'll do it. Mortal Kombat's so good, though.
I haven't watched it in years.
I haven't seen it.
I remember it being
great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's really campy. I started to watch Annihilation on Netflix because, like, oh man, I remember this being terrible. I can't remember how bad it is, but I watched like
the first five minutes.
One? Yeah.
Yeah, not as good.
Not as good as being very generous. It's the worst goddamn movie. One of the worst goddamn movies I've ever seen.
That's not true at all.
It's like top 10 worst movies I've ever seen, for sure.
Wow. I remember, actually, I've put that movie on multiple times when I see it on TV, and I keep it on. I don't necessarily watch it, but it stays on the TV. I'm hardcore about Mortal Kombat.
You are a masochist. I also have the like web series they did or something like that. I have it on my Vudu. I haven't watched it. It's like, it was kind of marketed as like the third movie, but I think it was done in chunks as a web series.
So. I don't know what you're talking about, but it sounds like something I'd also watch.
Yeah, I want to check it out. I just haven't. I keep forgetting I own it. Anyway, Haru inexplicably kicks a bunch of ass as the Great White Ninja and deflects bullets with broadswords.
Yeah,
and it's pretty great. First.
It's just like Matrix.
Yeah, they did it before the Matrix.
That's another thing that they do in movies a lot. Ninjas stop bullets with swords. I just accept that. Like, Joe's commenting on it now. It didn't even seem weird to me during the movie.
Yeah, it's just
like, yeah,
it's
of
just
course.
What happens?
Ninja sword stop bullets. Duh. Everyone knows that. Move on. Let's go. Next question.
Totally.
So you know what I'm talking about, though.
Yeah.
But don't try that at home. If you're being shot at, don't try to use ninja swords to stop it. I don't think it actually works.
No, I don't think it would actually.
If it does work, though, definitely tell us because I want to know.
Yeah, if you've survived an onslaught of machine gun fire using only two Chinese broadswords, then please holla back.
That would make a really great Mythbusters.
And now Tommy Akinara, I can't remember the guy's name, their one assistant guy, is going to be shot at while he swings Chinese broadswords.
Really, we have no idea what's going to happen.
Who could have known? Who could have predicted the outcome? I love Haru's insistence that Tanley is cheating on Allison. Is it Tanley? I keep calling him Tanley. Yeah, it is Tanley.
Martin Tanley.
Oh, you have a boyfriend. He's probably cheating on you.
Yeah, I say that to every girl I meet, even if I'm not interested in them, just to let them know that their boyfriend or husband's probably cheating on them. Because odds are he probably is.
I Ubered for some drunk college kids last night, and two of them were definitely not dating each other. They had like a boyfriend, girlfriend. They were definitely going to cheat on them with each other.
How do you know?
Oh, they were just all over each other. Well, I mean,
how do you know they had a boyfriend and girlfriend? You got
they were lives. Talking about it. Like one of the other friends was there, like, I'm gonna turn a blind eye, but if Sarah walks in, I'm on her side, kind of stuff. Yeah, like lecturing them about it.
Wow. So that now morally you have to find these people on Facebook and find their boyfriends and girlfriends and tell them now, Joe.
Do I morally have to do that?
Depends on how good of a human you are.
I'm not a very good human.
Then no, you don't.
These relationships are doomed. I feel like if you're willing to cheat, like then the relationship's dead.
You should just wear headphones so you don't have to hear it, because then you're not.
People like to talk to the Uber driver. It's weird.
They trust you for some reason.
Yeah.
Right? It's like a trust thing.
There's a lot of trust. I had two groups beg me to like let an extra person in the car, too. I was like, no. I can take four. If you want more, you need to hire an XL.
Wow, cold as ice.
Cold as
Joe,
ice.
Joe the Uber driver.
Yeah, no one fucks with me in my Uber.
That fifth person can die. I don't care about them. They're not my responsibility.
They can get a different Uber. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'll be back in 10 minutes.
And hopefully they don't show up on the news.
I forget the other part where he insists that Tanley must be cheating on her. It's like when the murder comes up in the paper. Yeah, like, if he's willing to do this, he's also willing to cheat on you.
He goes and sees her at her house.
Yeah, but right? What's he show her? That isn't it the murder in the newspaper that he witnessed? It's like, and if he's willing to kill this guy over nothing, he's definitely cheating on you.
The thing is, I don't think he's cheating on her for sure.
No.
Because there's a scene when he could definitely get attention from her because she's like, oh, let's go here. He's like, I don't have time for this. I need to go to work.
Yeah, I don't think he's cheating on her either. I'm not even sure he's sleeping with her. Like, it seems like he only cares about the money and the power and the greed.
Oh, he's sleeping with her, Joe. He's sleeping with her.
Yeah, with those legs, he probably is.
Oh, yeah. Because it seems like they've been dating for a while at this point.
Yeah.
So there's no way that a kingpin dates some chick for months and like they're waiting for marriage or something. I don't think so.
Why when they killed the first guy, Tanley killed the first guy and dropped him in the river, why not make sure the body sank? Why not just look over and see, oh, there's a guy down there with a boat. We should probably kill him too.
I thought about that. There was no splash. But then I was thinking, maybe he never looked off the side and didn't even know there was water there. Maybe he just thought it was like beach or something. I don't know. But that part was weird to me. Because I think they had to establish right away that this character was evil. Because that's kind of the killing there was kind of like, you've messed up. You're dead.
Tanley's just not a very complicated villain. He wants his money. He doesn't care who he kills. Meh. We don't even know what he wants to do with the money. He just seems to want to have a bunch of money.
You know, I just thought too, there's that scene when they go visit the other henchman who has the other parts of the place that they need.
Yeah.
And he kills some people there, right? But he clearly leaves the leader alive.
Yeah, the leader escapes.
I mean, he just lets him live, right? He doesn't escape.
Well, we don't really see it because we're kind of following Haru, who's stripping at the moment. And then he gets thrown out, and then suddenly there's two gunshots and two dead bodies. So we don't really know what transpires up there.
That's a great stripping scene, too. I tried to do that at a strip club before, and I got instantly kicked out. That's a joke. I never did that. I know that you can't do that.
No, Haru would definitely instantly get kicked out. Yeah. Everyone's like cheering for him and throwing money at him.
Never happened.
Like, no.
No chance.
Like, get out of the way of the homely strippers.
Yeah, and then he starts stripping for some reason. Like, of course, because he has no idea what a strip club is. Mm-mm. Oh, so that makes more sense. He just thinks when you're on the stage, you just take your clothes off and stuff.
And this is just what they do in Beverly Hills. Yeah. The hills of Beverly.
And how did he find her, though, from that little matchbook? Was it actually from a certain hotel?
Well, yeah, it was from the hotel he stayed at.
Okay,
so that's why he went to that hotel in the first place. But
why did she give him matches?
I don't remember. I don't remember why she gave him the matchbook.
Or he stole it from her.
Yeah, he like went through her purse, learned about her menstrual cycle.
That'd be a pretty good ninja move, though, because he stole that matchbook.
Oh, it's her matchbook.
Right.
Yeah.
She didn't give it to him, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know either. But it's pure coincidence that they run into each other because, you know, she just happens to be driving by and Gobe pops out at her wheel so that he sees her.
That is one of my favorite scenes when he's like, oh, I'll be able to find her. She's a natural blonde or whatever. And then he's wandering around. He's asking every blonde girl and then that blonde man. And it's just like, that's your plan. You're going to wander the streets and just go, Sally? Sally? And just like turn to everybody's like around. And be like, oh, I'm sorry.
How many beautiful blondes can there be in Beverly Hills?
Yeah, natural blondes.
Yeah.
Can you tell?
That's funny, and then it's just weird that she happens to be there. And fortunate that Gobei happens to be there. Or I guess he's following him anyway, so that's not fortunate. But fortunate that he sees the newspaper with her in it moments before she pulls up, because he just knows her name. He knows her real name.
The other thing, too, that I'm noticing now is, so Gobei seemed to have a lot of money, too, from all the stuff he was buying. Why didn't he just get, like, a hotel room next to...
He's got to be closer than that.
Because he just hung out in the closet the whole time.
He should have had a better hiding spot, because...
Something.
He almost died and almost got...
A lot of times.
Yeah. How was he hiding in there? Because people normally open closets in their hotel room to put things in.
Especially because when Haru first enters the room, he somehow thinks that everything in the room is like kind of trying to attack him. He's kind of doing a lot of moves at the flower pots and stuff, but he doesn't check the closet at all.
I love when he gets tangled in the curtain. He's like, oh, yeah.
And that's another scene where, for no reason, he decides to show off his terrible knife skills. Like, no one asks him. He just pulls them out and just starts breaking stuff.
Yeah. Then whips it through the door where Gobei is hiding in the closet. Mm-hmm. He also accidentally whips the knife at the hibachi place and kills a henchman. Thank God that was a henchman and not a waitress.
So actually, though, that's another time. He's really good at throwing... weapons when he's not looking where he's throwing them.
Yeah,
it's like three times in the movie he hits his mark
without looking. Yeah, it's when he's not trying to be a ninja, he's a pretty good damn ninja. Yeah, yeah. So maybe that's
why he wanted to be blindfolded so often.
Maybe he realizes that at the end when he has to help Gobei, and it's like, oh man, if I just become one with the universe and just let it go, then I can kick some ass. It's like I overthink it is my problem. Then that helps me buy the ending a bit better.
Yeah, and he kills his brother.
Yeah, well, the very end, yeah, he definitely kills Gobei.
Yeah, Gobei's dead. There's no way he's swimming back with a broken arm.
No, it's miraculous he survives that fall.
Yeah.
First of all, but then he's gonna drown for sure.
Yeah, or sharks.
Shark attack, drowning, something horrible is about to happen to Gobei.
Yeah,
and no one can help him.
I just realized why they allowed the kingpin guy to live. They probably thought there was going to be a second one.
Oh, could
be. The movie was, they were just like, this movie is fucking awesome. Guaranteed we're making like a whole series out of this. The Kingpin guy has to live. Mm-hmm. There you go. Solved it. We should write that.
Maybe they would have done I don't know how well this did, but maybe they would have done a sequel.
Two. You and me, Joe.
We write it. Get Kevin James to star in it.
I was gonna say Kevin Farley, one of the Farley brothers.
Sure.
To star in it.
Yeah.
Or Will Sasso.
Will Sasso would be good. Except he's in the canon of the first movie, so how do we just he has to play the same character as the first movie, and then he just goes through this journey to become a ninja somehow.
No, people, it's been 30 years, right?
20.
Just edit that out, okay?
Okay,
it's been 20 years. Okay, so yeah, 20 years. I mean, no one remembers the first movie, and they're not gonna be mad if the character changed.
I remember the first movie. I would be mad.
Never mind, we won't do the movie then. Fine, Joe, we're not going to write and cast Beverly Hills Ninja 2. It was like our claim to fame. But
I'll do it if we come up with a really great subtitle for it.
What do you mean?
Like Beverly Hills Ninja 2, Electric Boogaloo, or whatever the subtitle is.
Why don't we just use that?
I think it's Taken.
So? At some point, we're going to run out of names for movies, right? Right. There's going to be a time period in the future where we have to start reusing names, right?
I don't think so.
You don't think so? We'll just invent new words for them.
Yeah, sure. Okay. There's a lot of words in the English language.
Go on.
For instance, there's never been a movie called There's a Lot of Words in the English Language.
That's a decent movie.
That's a pretty good title, right? Beverly Hills Ninja 2. There's a lot of words in the English language.
Being a ninja is really, really, really hard. Wait. Beverly Hills Ninja 2. Thinking with your little sword.
Beverly Hills Ninja 2. Ninjango Unchained.
There's some copyright issues there, I think.
Nah, I didn't say Django. I said Ninjango.
I'll allow it.
So okay. They didn't trademark Ninjango, I guarantee it. And they can't trademark the word unchained. Feel pretty good about that.
You know what I just thought, too? Maybe there's enough footage from Beverly Hills 1 that you can use the footage of Chris Farley and we can just kind of fake it for Beverly Hills.
Man, we're getting to a point where we'll just be able to CG him into a movie.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, we don't even need him to be alive.
Yeah. We just need someone to play him, like someone who can do the physicality and like just computer generate the face over him. And
do the voice. Be able to bring back like actors and actresses that have died, right? Because they have enough film of them saying different words and different facial expressions.
Well, I mean, have you seen Rogue One?
The new one?
The new Star Wars.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, because Grand Moff Tarkin is CG.
Okay.
Because Peter Cushing is dead. So they just, yeah, they basically used images of him from the old Star Wars movies and recreated him. And then they had an actor play him and then just CG'd over him. So it's this other actor's voice doing the lines. He's doing a Peter Cushing.
Just think how terrible that is, though. You're an actor and you're like auditioning for a role and they're like, we're going to go with Heath Ledger. They're like, what? Yeah, we're just going to piece together Heath Ledger stuff because you just didn't cut it for us.
Yeah.
Like, you're now losing roles to dead actors and actresses.
It's going to happen. They're like getting close to being able to do it somewhat seamlessly.
And I'm excited about that.
I think it'll be interesting.
Yeah, we're going to have Jurassic Park soon too, right?
There should be another Jurassic World movie
I'm
coming.
I'm just saying like we'll clone.
Oh, we'll have a real Jurassic
Not
Park.
Not the movies, Joe. Okay, I'm thinking bigger than that, you small little prick.
Come on. Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll have a Jurassic Park soon and a Westworld soon.
We could have a celebrity park. We just start cloning celebrities.
Ooh. It'd be like the Wax Museum, except the wax figures kill everybody.
Yeah. Yes, Joe. That's awesome.
I love the pre-9/11 airport security.
Yeah, he just...
When he goes to the metal detector and pulls out his broadswords and is throwing stars and like, eh. And then he gets right on the plane.
I actually got on a plane with the same stuff the other day. It's just because I'm white. They were like, what are those for? And I said, dodging... deflecting bullets. And they were like, makes sense. I've seen that in a lot of movies.
Impressing leggy blondes.
Yeah.
What's this chain for? Hanging myself, actually. Accidentally hanging myself.
That's a good part of the movie.
I like that one. Because he's doing it pretty well. And then he whips it and catches it around his neck, catches it around the banister.
I think he did that by accident. He actually could have died in the movie during that part.
Nope, he would die. He would die some months later. From a needle.
Maybe he was trying to, like, not put the needle in him, and he just was, like, in his Haru character, and he accidentally messed up and stabbed himself.
Well, then he should have really blindfolded himself.
And, like, right.
And, like, thrown the needle at himself from across the room.
He would have hit wherever he was aiming.
Yeah. Then he'd be fine now. Poor Chris Farley.
Rip.
Rip.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace,
That's how
yes.
The kids are saying it these days.
These kids and their drugs.
Yeah, put that in your book. It stands for rest in peace.
I'll do a whole glossary. Here's a question I have for you. Maybe we talked about it last time because it's really weird to me, but I don't remember what we came up with. Why does this warehouse that with the evil warehouse with the bomb and the counterfeiting operation, why does it have a giant harpoon gun?
I don't know, but I do have some other things now, too, some other questions now that you bring that up. So I'm just assuming all evil people have a harpoon gun now. I just think they... Well, actually, Haru's character's surprised that it's there too, though, right?
Yeah.
So
he has a look of surprise, but what do you think it's there?
Same reason all the other stuff that doesn't make sense. They were like, how are we going to do this? And they're like, oh, harpoon gun. We'll just add it in.
We'll just have a harpoon gun there?
Yeah.
I think that before Tanley got into counterfeiting money, he was into whaling, illegal whaling operations. And that's where he made his initial fortune, because he has money. He's got a massive house in Beverly Hills.
Right.
So. He's a crime boss. I think he runs an illegal whaling operation and he was tired of doing that. So now he's into counterfeiting bills and he's got the whaling machinery in storage.
I just think he's not very good at being a criminal because I also thought like how good does that hibachi place have to be that instead of having that meeting at like a private place where they won't be interrupted or attacked, they choose to eat dinner at that hibachi restaurant.
Yeah, that's not a smart move.
I like really like we need to go over some of our villainous plans today. Oh, let's go meet at that hibachi place down in Little China.
Is he meeting the guy who has the plates?
No, he meets his henchman guy there, right? Those are the only two there.
Is it? Okay.
I know
a gang fight breaks out, so I didn't know if he was like meeting.
I think he's just meeting his second in control to talk about.
Because later they go to a meeting with the guys with the plates to arrange to buy them, and I think they just end up stealing them at gunpoint. So I thought maybe it was a prelude to that, and they're like, well, meet in an open place.
I was confused at that part too. Was it stealing, or it sounded like they asked some elderly man in the community that they respected to make a decision, and he said he decided then, and then he pulled guns out. So I'm not sure if like that decision was final and they just had the guns to back it up.
Yeah, I think they knew it was a mutually respected figure, and they got to him and somehow convinced them that they were the best to have these plates and that they would need guns to pull to take them peacefully.
Just think if you're that guy who's weighing in on it, which one of these evil villains should be allowed to try to counterfeit the Chinese money?
I don't even know how you judge something like that. Maybe Tanley, because he's clearly the more inept villain and he's going to screw it all up anyway.
Yeah, because if they would have just given the plates to the other guy, Haru doesn't care about the plates at all, right? He only cares about the girl.
Yeah, he only cares about the girl. He takes the plates.
Yeah, he does try to steal the plates at some point. Oh, because she says they can get him locked up with the plates. That's okay. Why.
So if he's locked up, he can't be your boyfriend anymore.
Right. And then she's single all of a sudden.
Okay. Yeah. That all falls into place.
One of the other things I have written here, I was thinking about, is when he hides in that big thing of like, what, octopus tentacles or blood or whatever it is.
Fish guts. Yeah.
At the beginning. Mm-hmm. The second he comes out of there, he's like, ugh, ah, ah. All the guards were like, they couldn't be that far away. And he's just making all of this noise. He's so unstealthy.
You want to learn some fun trivia about this?
Love to. Let's go.
This was originally written for Dana Carvey to play Haru. Mm-hmm. No surprise by that. Seems like a good fit.
But what happened?
I don't know. It just said it was originally written for Dana Carvey. I think it'd be interesting. There's a great 90s movie with Dana Carvey called Blank Slate, I think, where he plays a private eye with no short-term memory. Mm-hmm. Like every time he goes to sleep, he wakes up and has forgotten everything about his life. So it might be fun, given that, to see what he would do with Haru. It wouldn't be as physical of a comedy. It would be more like him just being incompetent.
I find it hard to believe. It seems like it was written for Chris Farley.
I think it was Farley, I think it was definitely rewritten once Farley came on board.
So maybe that's why a lot of the movie seems kind of like forced or fast, because he did rewrite a lot of it.
It could very well be, because Dana Carvey would approach it in a very different way. This is apparently Christian Bale's favorite film. He has said on multiple occasions that his favorite movie is Beverly Hills Ninja.
You know what? Maybe this is his guilty pleasure. He has this all the time. He's put so much pressure on himself. He's this amazing actor. And what he really wants to see is just a really shitty movie with somebody just doing their best at acting. Because, I mean, I was surprised how angry he can get, too. So this doesn't surprise me at how gentle he can get. And he likes his favorite movies, Beverly Hills Ninja.
Yeah. What do you think the best Christian Bale movie is?
Is The Mechanic?
Yeah, The Mechanic's him, yeah.
What are the other top runners besides Mechanic?
Dark Knight's very popular. No. Was the other one? The Big Short was the one from last year.
I
don't think
I've seen
that.
I really want to see that.
It's really good.
I would say off the top of my head, Mechanic.
Okay.
Because that was a very physical
role. I know I've seen Mechanic, but...
He had to become very... Like, he had to dedicate himself to that role.
Oh, I might go with The Prestige. The Prestige might be my favorite Christian Bale movie.
That's about, like,
magic. Magicians, yeah. It's like him and Hugh Jackman as competing magicians.
No, I'm going to go with Mechanic as the strongest acting role.
He's really good in The Fighter, too.
Oh, wow. Fighter might beat Mechanic.
Fighter's really, really good.
Those are both really good. I respect him a lot, mm-hmm. his acting.
Yeah, he's very good. What do you think Chris Farley's favorite Christian Bale movie would be?
Probably Dark Knight. I just feel like Chris Farley would like Dark Knight. Yeah. I can't see him making it through The Mechanic or The Fighter. He just doesn't seem like he'd be doing drugs.
I think he might like The Fighter just because, oh man, that guy is totally strung out right now. I could go for some heroin.
Well, there's a lot of crazy people in Dark Knight, too.
Yeah, that's true.
The guy who puts that bag over his head, is that in that movie?
I think someone does get bagged. I don't remember what the context is for it in Dark Knight.
That would freak him out on some drugs.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah. Speaking of Dark Knight, though, I read this. I guess I don't know if it's true that Heath Ledger, when he was preparing for the Joker role, he did a bunch of very strange things. Have you read any of this
about himself? I read that about Jared Leto when he was doing the Joker.
I think I read this about Heath Ledger. I guess I could be wrong. That he stayed in a hotel by himself for a month straight where he got himself like 2 hours of sleep. And he was doing all these other weird things to himself.
I think that was Heath Ledger, yeah. He was like sleep deprived and yeah.
That's probably why he was so good. But like, doesn't it seem like that could have been the reason why his life...
Could be. He could have
turned out how
strained himself too far and then he was on these medications. Yeah.
He wanted to become the Joker character and mm-hmm. in the end he did.
Yeah.
That's pretty... crazy.
Jared Leto was doing things like sending his castmates dead rats in the mail, stuff like that. Used condoms, things like that. It was really fucked up.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like that.
I feel like
it's a little bit easier to send someone a dead rat than it is to give yourself like 2 hours of sleep for 2 weeks straight.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go, though. I mean, if I were going to play the Joker, I would just, you know, play the Joker. I would just like do it like an actor would. I'm not big into method stuff, but I think that's probably was really effective for Ledger to be sleep deprived and, you know, kind of always on the brink.
I thought that was one of the best acting jobs I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So that makes sense because he wasn't acting.
Whoa.
Whoa.
He just became the character.
He was probably robbing banks and all sorts of stuff.
cutting on his face.
Wow.
Yeah, could be.
This took a turn for Dark Knight. We just really, that's not a guilty pleasure, by the way. That movie's fabulous.
Yeah. I'll probably do it as a Patreon exclusive episode at some point. Then I want to use Patreon to just talk about great movies that everyone loves.
Yeah.
Dark Knight will be on there for sure.
Also, Haru gets punched in the face by a random dad, which seems harsh to me.
Oh, yeah. I wrote that down, too. His first exposure to Americans, yeah, other than Allison, is this mean guy who, what'd you say to my kid? And he starts to explain himself. And before he can explain himself, he gets punched in the face. What also, a dickhead.
Too, I was thinking other stuff about this movie. So Haru rents a car. So I'm just going to assume that he got to the States, took driver's classes, got citizenship, all this stuff, and then rented the car because that's the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah.
So like this was a long movie. Like him and Gobei really settled into Beverly Hills.
They really made their presence known.
And then he chose a red convertible too for some reason.
Yeah. And Gobei knew he was going to choose a red convertible because he's already in the trunk when Haru gets there.
That's actually, I'm thinking about this now. They lost a good opportunity. They should have given him a very, very small vehicle, something like a smart car, and put him in there. And just like, because they did have the cool scene with the seatbelt almost choking him.
Yeah.
And then he decides to kill the car, like stab it a bunch.
How does Haru rent a car? He can't have a driver's license.
These are dangerous questions you're asking yourself, Joe.
Do you think the ninja are just masters, ironically, at counterfeiting documents?
No, I think we're just not supposed to question it because it's okay. Very hard to rent a car, right? Renting a car is like...
Well, I think there's a lot of paperwork to fill out and you have to have a driver's license because you have to prove that you're at least 25.
So, yeah, this makes sense because they say he's 25 in the movie. That's why we don't want people to question the car rental. So he's 25 years old.
At least, yeah. 33,
it says 25 years ago when the movie starts.
That's right. Yeah, you mentioned that at the beginning.
25
yeah.
years ago.
So yeah, he's supposed to be 25. With his 8-year-old haircut that fits, maybe.
I guess that, well, what do the other ninjas' hairstyles look like? He should have had the same hair as them.
Well, Gobei's kind of like a long flowing Liu Kang look.
Beautiful hair.
Yeah, it's so weird to me when he's wearing the wig as the woman and the wig gets pulled off and his hair underneath it is exactly the same.
Exactly the same.
Like same length, same texture. It's just straighter. His wig is straighter. Hair, but he could have just straightened his hair and been fine.
I wonder who thought of that.
I don't know, but it's pretty great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Whip his wig off and his hair is underneath the exact same.
He also, there's a scene where he adjusts his fake boobs,
yeah,
which I thought was, he's really getting into character.
And he beats the shit out of a guy with his high heel shoes.
And his purse. He uses his purse to beat somebody, yeah, too.
Do you know, have any idea how long it took me to get my hair right? Awesome. Well, do you want to talk about the guilty pleasures of the characters?
Yeah, I have some good guilty pleasures this time.
Okay. Well, what we do, well, maybe this is different since the last time we did this episode, is we pick a character for each other. But we can talk about other ones you want to bring up after we do that. So you pick a character for me, and then I'll give one to you.
Okay, you can do Gobei.
Okay, Gobei. And you can have Joey.
The servant?
The Chris Rock character.
You were supposed to give me Haru, but that's okay. I'll take...
We can also talk about Haru.
I'll take Joey because I was going to say stand-up comedy was this thing, but we'll see what I can come up with.
I feel like Gobei's we've like talked about. And it's like he likes building these characters that he's going to disguise himself as. It's like there's forklift operator guy and there's woman and...
He's like the guy from that show Pretender.
Yeah.
He can do anything.
He's a pretender, but he seems to take a lot of pride in it. Maybe also when Haru sleeps, he's like auditioning for plays. Just wants to be an actor on the stage. That's his calling. That's why he becomes a progressively worse ninja over the course of the film, because it's not his passion anymore.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What else could he?
I would say cross-dressing for sure. He definitely, he was proud of his outfit.
He did not need to disguise himself as a woman. He did not need to be front and center. He just put on this dress one day and it felt right.
Well, actually, I noticed this time too. He did his makeup a lot.
Yeah.
So he like really went into it. And he also, I was telling you this, he does a lot of shopping in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be a passion of his, or at least it became one.
I think it's like a mandated addiction in Beverly Hills. You have to shop. Like that's all anyone does in this movie is shop. Yeah. Shop and counterfeit money so they can shop more.
I noticed that about Haru too. He buys multiple pairs of shoes in this, so he loves shoe shopping. That's his guilty pleasure. It's just like,
I think,
oh my gosh.
I think he likes that someone takes his shoes every day because he's like, ooh, I get to go buy new shoes. And of course he buys his pimp outfit right away. And yeah, I think shopping is everyone's guilty pleasure in this.
Yeah.
What do you think for Joey?
Well, I think Haru tells us what Joey's guilty pleasure is.
Okay.
It's clearly choking the chicken. So you can use that metaphorically if you want. But
so do you think Joey actually catches a chicken and rips its head off and then he gets a taste for it and wants to do that from now on?
I meant like choking the chicken. That's like a reference to...
Yeah, I know.
Something else. Do it. He never actually catches the chicken, I don't think.
He likes choking his small sword.
He's about as gifted... at he likes ninja skills
sheathing his small sword
as his mentor. Yeah. Joey doesn't give us a lot about his passions. He says he's into karate. Definitely he's not into work at all.
No, this is why I wanted to bring it up, because it takes him, I forget how long he says at the beginning, when we first introduced Joey, it's like it took you 79 minutes to deliver these three bags to this one room. What do you think he's doing in the 79 minutes? Like, what, maybe that's his guilty pleasure.
He's choking his chicken in the various bathrooms or unused rooms.
Okay.
In the hotel.
So he likes going around this fancy hotel and masturbating in every room?
Yeah, or maybe he just like gets in them and he's just like doing like ninja skills in their rooms and stuff. Because
after he meets Haru, I bet he would be in more into the ninja stuff.
He looks like the type of character that definitely smokes, so he's taking smoke breaks a lot. I don't know if smoking is one of his addictions. Maybe napping. Looks like he likes to nap.
Nothing beats a good middle of the
day.
But
they don't really tell us much about his character, right? You don't even see his home.
No, I just find it interesting that he disappears for hours at a time at this job and still keeps the job.
Right. I do want to brainstorm this, because I could talk a while about what he does in those times. Because his boss doesn't give us any clues. He doesn't give us any clues. We just know that this time is spent doing something.
I don't know why he's not fired. Like, maybe his guilty pleasure is gathering incriminating intel on his coworkers, on his boss.
And then he gives them a bunch of reasons how it's like unlawful firing or something.
Did he?
Yeah.
Did I miss that part?
Well, they don't say you're fired, but he's like, oh, I have a bad back. I don't want to sue for all these things. I'm just working at my own pace.
It's like, I would hate to have to go on disability and sue this place for $1 million, but yeah. I don't think the guy's really afraid of that.
It doesn't seem like it, but why else not fire him?
I think his guilty pleasure is gathering incriminating evidence against this guy.
Yeah,
or maybe all of his superiors at this hotel.
Some people's guilty pleasure is to be at work and not actually work. So that seems like when he gets off on it a little bit, like taking that extra time to deliver these packages, trying to get away with it. It's like sneaky.
See how long he can get away with it.
Yeah, he doesn't have anything like super cool going on in his life. He just comes to work, goes home. I think he's just a simple individual. Maybe he plays Call of Duty.
Right.
Or something. He looks like he might be into gaming. I'm not sure. World of Warcraft.
Sure.
Who knows?
I like that.
Or he's in a band. Maybe he plays like harmonica or something, because he doesn't look like he could play guitar.
And his band meets in various rooms in this hotel.
Yes, the band practice is always at the hotel.
It's pretty good. Anyone else you want to talk about their guilty pleasure that you're dying to get into?
I just thought about this now. What about the sensei? Does he have any
twin geisha? 18-year-old twin geishas.
Nice.
I mean, that's literally his guilty pleasure is legendary in this community.
I think it's a baccarat or something. He has a lot of money too, so he gambles a lot. I'm assuming he's a big gambler.
Yeah,
he sneaks away for twin geishas, gambling, drinking, the whole.
Being a ninja is not really a profitable business, so yeah, he's got to be getting money from somewhere.
Well, where's they go on a mission, right? Do they get paid in gold coins for the? What was the mission? Do you know?
I don't think it's clear what the mission is. I think. Actually, they might be. There's a mention to them like defending the town. Like there's a town nearby, so maybe the town pays them for protection.
Yeah,
I would buy that, but not that much because it's clearly a ton of money. So I think, yeah, like he likes gambling.
Definitely gambling. Who else do we have? Sally Jones. She obviously likes role playing. Definitely into role playing
because she slips into her various characters very well. She's Sally Jones. She's the.
Yeah.
She's trying to flirt with the Will Sasso character.
About most of her role playing, she uses her real name. So I don't know if we can call that role playing. She's just a psycho. I don't know. I don't know if you can call it role playing if you just pretend not to be your sister's, who's now dead's, ex-boyfriend.
She likes seeing how far she can get with obvious lies.
Pathological liar. It's fun.
She just wants to get caught.
What about Martin Tanley besides the obvious whale hunting?
What? Yeah, he's definitely a whale poacher. For some, he goes to the strip club to meet with the Yakuza.
He definitely likes shooting people in the face with guns. We're assuming it's the face. They never show any of them, but
yeah.
That seems to be a pleasure of his.
He's a very hands-on villain. Like, he's always in the line of fire. I think he has a death wish. But what does he do to unwind? What's his guilty pleasure?
Sex.
He strikes me as a very asexual character.
You're right.
He's got he's got this leggy blonde, like throwing himself at him.
I was hoping you'd buy that, Joe. You're right. He definitely would have like kissed that blonde when she was being all over him or something.
Yeah, something.
Actually, you know what? She might have. She doesn't kiss any of the characters in this movie.
Mm-mm.
She might have like said like, "No, I'm not doing it." Because even at the end, when Murr's led to believe they're like going off together, they've still never kissed on screen.
Right. Yeah. No kisses.
So he just gets off on power and money.
But he's very open about his love of power and money.
Why was he upset that she was upstairs at that one party? He said, "What are you doing up here?"
Yeah, I don't know.
Because then he just leaves her in that same room. So if she wasn't supposed to be in there, why would he just leave her there?
I have no idea.
That was a weird part.
Maybe it's because it's atypical for her to be up there. But wasn't she in there when Haru showed up? Like, that's... Yeah. She's investigating. Around. She's snooping, yeah.
Yeah, so if she wasn't supposed to be in there, then he just leaves her in the same room.
Yeah.
That seems a little bit odd.
Well, I think he just thinks it's odd, but doesn't trust... He doesn't not trust her to be in there.
So he does trust her. So yeah. We don't know how long they've been dating.
I think...
This could have... Her sister could have been killed like 10 years ago.
Yeah, we have no idea. I think Tanley's guilty pleasure is leaving fake birthday cards for people. like he knows all of his employees for people's life's birthday. And like when their moms forget it, he's like, "I'm going to throw a card in there so that they just have a great day." And that would explain why Sally's mom calls her Alice.
Sally Jones.
Oh, you got anything you want to plug or recommend or for our loyal listeners?
I got nothing. I would say this: if you like this, listen to the other ones. See if it's for you.
Listen to the other episode you were on? Or the other episodes of this?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, this is about how it goes.
I'll plug your own podcast on your podcast.
Genius. Ooh.
So meta, I can't even handle it. All right, well, I'll just say that our Twitter is at quote guilty. My personal Twitter is at @play_architect. You can find us on facebook.com/quote-unquote-guilty or email us at quoteunquoteguilty@gmail.com or contribute to our Patreon at patreon.com/wordsalad.
And remember, I am the little Niz and I'm a reverse name specialist. So if you ever want to know your reverse name, feel free.
Yeah, tweet. Well, I guess you can't tweet. Is there any way people can contact you, get the reverse name?
Just tweet Joe, and then he'll contact me, and then I'll contact him back immediately, and then he'll tweet you.
Okay, this is going to be really complicated, but yes, I will do that. Tweet me with, if you want to know your reverse name, I will pass it on to
Brett.
I thought
you have like a few dozen people. How hard could it be if three people or one person asked you
for that? Well, I mean, this is going to be on the internet forever, so people listening to this 10 years from now might tweet me like, "My name's Robin. What's my reverse name?" And then I have to...
You're pretty ambitious for how successful this is going to be. 10 years from now, this is still going to be relevant. I like that joke. I like the confidence.
Yeah, I guess it... I don't know. I guess it's ambitious to think it would still exist online in 10 years.
If we're having a problem with too many reverse name requests, I think that's a good problem to have, Joe. So let's worry about it if it happens.
Well, wrap us up. What is Robin's reverse name?
Robin.
Yeah, that was my example I just gave. Like, what if someone 10 years from now says, "Hey, my name is Robin. What's my reverse name?"
Robin gives me a reverse name, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Robin, it's like, we'll go through the process here a little bit. Like, friendly bird, beautiful round eggs. Cassandra.
What if Robin's a boy?
If Robin is a boy, Cassandra.
You heard it here first. Although I think Robin's typically a girl's name. It's just a superhero boy's name.
You were trying to trick me.
No.
You weren't. You just thought of it afterwards. So, no, let's go. Robin's a male's name now. It's very soft, gentleman.
Actually, I think I knew a male Robin. I think my sixth grade teacher's name was Robin.
Okay, we're going to go with Clive.
So Clive for a boy, Cassandra for a girl.
Yes, reverse names.
Thank you, Brett, our reverse name specialist.
The world is welcome for my talents.
All right, we're done. Bye.
Bye. Look into my eyes.
This podcast is a Word Salad production. Wonky oranges, righteous dragons.
I'm done with this.